I reckon that there's hardly an American citizen who hasn't been directly affected by the horrendous policies of this crooked administration.
Yep. And with that, we kind of have to leave it hanging, I guess, John, because you've got a show to do.
All righty.
All right.
Billy Shears thing coming up.
Yes, we do, and a rather cool one, too. I cheated. I listened.
Yeah, first part, first of a 2, 3, or 4 part series, in fact.
Yes, indeed.
And then there's a big announcement, but everyone will have to wait for that.
All right, we'll see you on the other side, brother.
Okay, man.
And so, the hour having come to an end, here's the late, great Lowell George, reminding you to... that is darn near crippled, that is on its knees, and in the building of our security, homeland security, devil brown man protection fence, we can't even use American.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look. Right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Thursday evening for most of you. It's, well, Friday afternoon here in Australia. And it's the end of the broadcast week for me. But we got a lot of stuff to get through tonight. By request from David last night... He made a comment as he got off the phone about this ALF bombing. And I got sent some links by Gene, our wonderful news ninja. And I've been scanning through this stuff And it seems a bit dodgy to me. This story, I don't know if you're familiar with it. I will familiarize you with it a little bit later in the show. Also later in the show, I have a very, very special announcement to make, but I'm going to save that too. I love the anticipation. But before we get there, it's a Thursday night, so as you know, that means it's a night for Mr. Billy Shears. And what we have going on tonight is the first of a multi-part series where Billy's going to cover, surprise, surprise, John Lennon. And this is a series now. This is part one of Lennon on Lennon, and this is Blame It on Rio. So as we all know, Mr. Billy Shears has a direct connection with the spirit of Mr. John Lennon. So this should be rather good. So without further ado, Bob Kincaid, let's run Shears music.
This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn.
John Lennon is a man who lived and continues to live through his words and his music. Starting with this segment, and for several weeks, I want to examine John's music. I named this series Lennon on Lennon, Blame It on Bermuda. It's a fitting title because we start with John talking about his life from the early days and then leading up to his vacation in Bermuda, where he was flooded with ideas that has become double fantasy. Now, several days before his death, John granted his first radio interview in 5 years to Andy Peoples of the BBC. With Yoko at his side, John looked back on his life and career in his words and music. This is Lennon on Lennon.
We come along on Saturday morning, greeting everybody with a smile.
She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. Please, 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 oh yeah, like I please you. I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand.
After the Beatles' last tour, which was 65, I think, was the one where the Ku Klux Klan were burning Beatle records, and I was held up as a Satanist or something. Then we decided no more touring, that's enough of that. I'm going to put up with it.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. I need somebody. Hey, you've got to hide your love away.
I was thinking, well, this is like the end, really. You know, there's no more touring. That means there's going to be a blank space in the future at some time or other. That's when I really started considering, what can one do? Considering the life without the Beatles, what would it be? Suddenly we were together all the time, sort of in a corner mumbling and giggling together and doing Two Virgins and Bags and that. Paul George and me, what the hell are they doing? What's happened to him? You know, and my attention completely went off then. No, it wasn't deliberate.
Working class hero is something to be.
It was really irrelevant what serious critics in the pop business said about what we were doing in Bed and Bags and that, as long as what we felt our duty or our position was to keep on about peace until something happened. It was in the tradition of Gandhi, only with a sense of humor. What we wanted to do was have something besides White Christmas being played every Christmas, you know? And there's always a war, right?
Yeah.
there's always somebody getting shot. So every year you can play it and there's always somebody being tortured or shot somewhere. So the lyric stands in that respect. For a long time, I wasn't listening to music, to the pop radio, you know, the rock and roll stuff, because it would either cause me to get sweaty because it would bring back memories I didn't want to know about, or I would get that feeling that I'm not alive because I'm not making it. And if it was good, I hated it because I wasn't doing it. If it was bad, I was furious because I could have done better or whatever. So I didn't get involved, and I listened to classical and music. Underground, I was overground. I was all over the place, like I said, all over the world, traveling, and we were doing all kinds of business. You might have heard cows and all that sort of stuff. I mean, we were pretty damn active. We just weren't in the papers. We weren't available for comment, that's all. Mastered the art of rice. They say anyone can cook rice, but few can cook it well. I can cook it reasonably well. I can do fish. I've learned to make bread, which I was thrilled with. I took a Polaroid of my first bread, you know. There's these two lo- I couldn't believe they came out like that. I started from the Mother album onwards trying to shave off all imagery, pretensions of poetry, illusions of grandeur. I call a la Dylan, Dylan-esque. I didn't want any of that. Just say what it is, simple English, make it rhyme and put a backbeat on it and express yourself as simply, as straightforwardly as possible. As they say, northern people are blunt, right? So I'm trying to write like I am.
Next week, John is starting over in Bermuda, and we'll look at his creative process for Double Fantasy. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Jeez, Billy, thank you. 5 days before he was murdered. Bob and I were having a little side chat here in our production chat as we were listening to that, and, you know, Bob saying 5 days before he got dead. Breaks my heart, and I totally agree. And I asked, you know, Bob, you know, imagine if he were here now. And Bob's response, what would the resistance to the war look like if he was still here? I mean, you listen to him, you know, you listen to this footage of the man, and you hear just a wonderful spirit. He really, really was. And what a waste. What an absolute waste that we had to lose someone like that. Because I can just imagine if John were here. He'd be everywhere about the Iraq War. You name it. He'd also probably be, you know, banned from coming to the United States. He'd probably also be, you know, on every no-fly list. Damn. I hear the man, I hear John Lennon's voice, and it really, really breaks my heart that some nut job had to take him out. And all the music we lost out on. I mean, to be purely selfish about the situation, but I look very forward to installment two, which will not be next week, actually. It'll be the following week, because, and here comes the big announcement, because next Thursday night, or Friday morning, depending on where you are on this beautiful blue marble, we've got an interview. This is really special. Now, I talked about the possibility of this a little bit last night, but I have confirmed just a couple of hours ago that for the entire hour a week from tonight, I will have Mr. Travis Meeks from Days of the New and Tree Colors on the show, and I think you're going to find this a really fantastic conversation. Travis and I have been chatting over the last couple of days, getting to know each other. We've hit it off really, really well. And he sounds very excited to come on the program. And I think there's going to be some very, very interesting little kind of... We're going to probably go a whole lot of places. I hope to get some information about, you know... One of the things I want the answer to is where the name Days of the New came from. Bob asked this question the other day. And I'm going to get him to explain about, or I hope to. It's not like I got a gun to his head. But I find this such a unique project, and I know I harp on, and I harp on about a few acts, but there are a few, you know, and we all have this. We have artists, musicians, poets, writers that connect with our, you know, our humanity in some intangible yet sensory way. And so, like I said, we've had some great conversations, seeing if we were going to actually get to this point of coming on the air. But yeah, so a week from tonight, Mr. Travis Meeks, and I've loaded Bob up with plenty of Days of the New to get you familiar, and I've also asked him to nominate some of his own tracks, you know, which are really standouts for him. And what the new album's going to be, because I think Travis falls into an interesting category of musician, even though, you know, I don't like to categorize people too much. But he falls into this corner of folks that it's more than just music. It's an entire art form. The visual, the sonic, the lyric. And as he said, you know, his approach to records is like writing a soundtrack without the film. And I like that idea. I dig that idea. So anyway, ELO has just popped up and told me that the show post is up, and you can go there, and there should be some links to Travis's multiple MySpace pages. Go and check them out. Say hello. And there's some samples of some stuff that's not released up on those MySpace pages, especially the Tree Colors one, that you can have a listen to and get an idea of where he's going. And like I said, I'm hoping that this is the beginning of a friendship, because we seem to have some very similar interests and tastes and whatnot. And I asked him on the phone today, I go, you familiar with Michael Hedges? And he, of course. So yeah, it should be a lot of fun. It should be a really, really good night. So anyway, so I figure, even though I normally don't do a track of the day when we have a Billy Shears music, I am going to do one tonight because of the announcing of the interview. So in honor of finally getting, I shouldn't say finally, that's really unfair, but in getting Mr. Meeks to say, yeah, I think this is a cool idea, off of Days of the New 3, the Red album, this is a great track. It's called Dirty Road. I love the guitars on this. It's another great song, great playing, great arranging, and a whole hell of a lot of emotion. So without further ado, Days of the New, Dirty Road. Roll it, Bob. But anyway, so do not miss next Thursday night show. How self-indulgent can I be? All right, let's get to some serious business here. Last night, when David from Maine was on the phone with me, he mentioned the ELF attack. And to be perfectly honest, this had slipped by me when he mentioned it. And I wasn't exactly clear on what he was talking about, but as usual, our news ninja, Gene, never misses a trick and sent me a whole bunch of stuff. And I've been having a scan on this, and you tell me if there's not something seriously wrong somewhere here. This is from telegraph.co.uk. Hey, arson attack on green homes by eco-terrorists. Okay, the headline alone makes me go, pardon the out of me. Eco-terrorists committing arson on green homes. Now, it might just be me, but I kind of doubt it. I'm suspect of the story from the headline. And it says, an arson attack on five luxury environmentally friendly homes thought to be the work of eco-terrorists was started with wood or paper rather than an incendiary device as first thought, investigators said yesterday. And the original reports on this were, you know, there were explosives, which ended up being wrong. FBI officials studying the wreckage of the development on the outskirts of Seattle said they recovered no explosives from the scene. It was initially reported that incendiary devices had been found inside the homes. The blazes were set in a pre-dawn attack on Monday, apparently by members of the Earth Liberation Front, ELF. Now, there are some questions on whether this group actually exists, you know, and it starts making me think of Monty Python. And they say, ELF, a loose collection of radical environmentalists, a banner found at the scene bore the initials ELF and read, built green? Nope, black. McMansions and RCDs, rural cluster developments, are not green. Dave Gomez, an FBI agent, suggested those responsible may have deliberately avoided using an incendiary device to avoid the possibility of a long sentence if they ever stood trial. The use of such a device is a federal offense, carries a mandatory 30-year sentence, he said. So whoever committed the crimes may have been cognizant of that. The sign, a spray-painted message in red mocking the developers' claims that luxury homes were environmentally friendly, was the only definitive clue found at the scene. And Bob says, you know, makes me think of COINTELPRO. The moment I finally started looking at some of this, that's what I'm thinking, right? Any environmental group worth its weight is fairly public, and they're usually not violent or destructive. And I'm sorry, this is someone masking, this is my opinion. Good point, Bob. Spray paint? What about the CFCs? Not very green. Good point. I hadn't even thought of that. Now, call me cynical. Call me paranoid. But this looks like something else being portrayed as environmental terrorism. Now, the concept of environmental terrorism is kind of like military intelligence. It's an oxymoron. I would not see even the most fervent environmental group wouldn't even think of burning something of this size to make an environmental point. You following me here? how... Like I said, you know, call me paranoid, call me suspicious, and you'd probably be right. A friend of mine told me there's nothing wrong with being paranoid, it's just a heightened sense of awareness. and they continue on. Police estimate the fires caused more than $7 million worth of damage. The so-called Street of Dreams, a row of furnished show homes that last summer attracted tens of thousands of visitors keen to see the latest in high-end housing, interior design, and landscaping. Three homes were destroyed in the fires and two suffered smoke damage. No one was injured. Since the 1990s, ELF has claimed responsibility for dozens of attacks on companies or organizations considered to be harming the environment. One alleged ELF activist is currently on trial in Tacoma in connection for the 2001 firebombing of the University of Washington Center of Urban Horticulture. The FBI said there was no evidence of any connection between Monday's fires and the trial of Brianna Waters, a 32-year-old violin teacher from California who is accused of serving as a lookout while her friends planted the firebomb. Well, exactly, Bob. Bob's asking, what about the carbon emissions from the fire? That's what I'm talking about. What right-thinking environmentalist would go and burn three homes as an environmental protest? Just the concept of that is absolutely frickin' absurd. Now, I think of myself as being one of the most... full-on environmentalist going. And no matter what, I wouldn't think about doing something like this. And I don't believe that the ELF, even if they exist, would do this. Now, like I said, here we go into slight tinfoil hatdom. You know, there is the side of, you know, COINTELPRO kind of thing. You know, we'll create a fake group to go out and do violent things and go and do destructive things to, you know, damage the reputation of the environmental movement. However, one of the other links that old Gene sent me. Hold on a second, I gotta find the page. From portland.indymedia.org, there's a little thread talking about this incident. And someone has a link that says one of the torch homes had a sale pending, and one of the researchers for the website makes a very good statement here. Arson is a crime most commonly committed for financial gain. Therefore, it is most likely that financial gain was the motive for these fires. Both housing and vehicular arsons have been on the rise over the past several years, as arsonists can be paid cheaply to torch a house or vehicle while the owner makes sure to be someplace for an alibi. Arsonists don't charge much money, so tracking the money in such situations can be extremely difficult. Arsonists are also extremely unlikely to be convicted, which is why there is a supply of arsonists for hire. Proving insurance fraud in such cases is extremely difficult, so I would advise people not to hold their breath waiting for someone to solve this case. It would be interesting to find out what the insurance payout is, however. And I think that very well, you know, follow the money, is much more likely to be the case. Even than the COINTELPRO thing. However, the FBI then picking up on it and trying to portray it as something else or something as environmental terrorism, that's a, like Islamo-fascist. It doesn't exist. And Bob's reading my mind here. I reckon maybe the housing market going in the tank, the builder needed a little State Farm lightning. Yeah, I would think that would be much more likely. I would definitely go for that. Someone else says, and I was about to lose my shirt in a real estate deal. I might think arson and of the ALF as a fall guy. Easily enough to do, really. Just get some spray paint and a sheet along with the lighter fluid and poof. Instant compelling red herring. And that's what I reckon this is. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of people, you know, from Portland indie media. You know, I mean, if there ever was an environmental state in the United States, I'd have to say that Oregon's got to be one of them. And they're all saying, you know, there's a whole bunch of, you know, asking, you know, what is the ELF and has the ELF had a communique or released anything about it? Because any terrorist group worth their salt would openly take responsibility, wouldn't they? But we don't have that here. We have a spray-painted sheet. I also find it interesting that the original reports say, oh, there's an incendiary device. Oh, wait a minute. No, there wasn't. There's another report of it from the Seattle Times as well. It says, officials are blaming domestic terrorism for fires early today that destroyed three multi-million-dollar homes and damaged a fourth, which were built as part of last year's Seattle Street of Dreams in the Maltby area. Damage was estimated at $7 million. Early reports indicated explosive devices were found inside the homes and nearby a spray-painted sign bearing the initials of the Earth Liberation Front. I said, Bob, does this not ring to you like... What is that bit in Life of Brian? You know, we are the whatsy whatsy whatsy. No, we're the whatsy whatsy whatsy. I can't remember it at the moment, but
this is just what the people's front of Judea splitters.
Yeah, or the people's Judea front or whatever. You know, and it's just like no wankers. This screams to me of either it's not an organization or a particular organization being used as a very convincing red herring to those that wouldn't, you know, kind of analyze the situation. But, you know, I do not hold this with much. I'm skeptical, to put it lightly, that... You know, the idea of environmental terrorism, right? You know, they tried to use that term down here. I don't know if this made it to the States, but there was a spray painting on the roof of the Opera House, and it was all just to stop the war, and you know, local radical terrorists. You know, and it's just like, excuse me? And Bob's reminding me, you know, that you know, the folks in West Virginia that are trying to keep their homes from being blown up and trying to have some potable water, you know, refer to the folks like Cold River Mountain Watch and related organizations as environmental extremists. And this is just a great example of opposite world to me. The environmentalists are not extremists. Not at all. They look at the entire picture and see that something needs to change. I think I can say this because I consider myself an environmentalist. I hope that by the time I die... people will remember me as such, if I'm remembered at all. And I'll tell you what, I'd rather not be remembered and have some of this crap be fixed. In this other article, Metal League say here, investigators are looking at the possibility that attempts were made to start a fifth house on fire. The Earth Liberation Front has claimed responsibility for other arsons, including one at the University of Washington in 2001, for which a woman is now on trial in Tacoma, as they were mentioning before. So, if they did this, why haven't they claimed responsibility yet? Huh? Minor overthought? You know, kind of didn't think about that bit when you decided to come up with the red herring there, did you, the FBI or whoever? Or the actual perpetrators, which I would put more to the builders or the owners. I mean, it's not a new idea. Lightning, you know, insurance claim lightning has happened before. You know, could have been one of his bloody competitors. Could have been a non-green builder. Someone who just wants to waste, and not actually break away from common practices. How about that for an option? I got a whole bunch of different ways that they could be looking when it came to finding out where this came from. How about a competitor? And stories like this really worry me, actually. Thanks, David, for pointing this thing out to me. You know, this kind of stuff bothers me because globally, the world is waking up to our environmental situation. Global warming is a reality. It's already happening. Resources are running out. We've covered so much of this stuff on this program, you know, palm oil, all that kind of stuff, that something needs to change. Not just something, many things need to change. The way we run our societies needs to change in a huge way. And where this worries me is just as the environmental cause is really starting to get some traction. Like I said, I don't know how it looks from the United States, but a lot of the rest of the world is on the case and trying to do the best that they can. But there are people who would love to take this kind of opportunity to shit on the environmental movement that actually has been cutting through with science and facts and debate and understanding. And the ability to think outside our unsustainable consuming ways. Environmental terrorists. Just the whole thing, that just the concept of that does my head in. If you have an opinion on this, please ring in. I'd love to get someone else's take on this. 877-443-2366. Because I'm just getting to this story now, and I just don't buy it. I don't buy it one bit. The idea, and I mean, I know I'm kind of stuck in a loop here, but the very simple idea, the concept of environmental terrorism, It doesn't exist. Now, mind you, in any cause or anything, you're going to have your occasional nutter. You might go and do something, but they're not doing it that they're not doing it for the cause. They're doing it for their own ego. I'm absolutely blown away by this story. I mean, it looks like it was a hell of a fire. There's a $100,000 award offered for information on the blaze. Oh, this I gotta check out. I'm just seeing another link. Archive. Where'd it go? Blazes linked to eco-terrorists. I'll tell you, if I ran into someone who was one of these eco-terrorists, I'd smack him. It's like, what are you doing? Are you a moron? Okay, the timeline has... Oh, there. Sorry. I'm just having a look here. Okay, they're saying that in 97 there was a wild horse and burro facility, the USDA Research Center, a ski resort, a ranger station? Come on. Why would an environmentalist attack a ranger station? Mr. Ranger, oh, Mr. Ranger, sir. I can't find the recycling bins, Mr. Ranger, sir. Chevy dealer. Now that, sorry, hate to say I could see a Chevy dealer. Not that I'm condoning any such action. There was actually an episode of Numbers last year where some firebombing, very interesting actually, some firebombings of an auto dealership were being linked to an eco-terrorist group. And there were more bombings, all repeating stuff that happened in the 60s. And what do we find out? This is in a TV program. That the old FBI agent who was an infiltrator into the protest groups in the 60s. And well, he had to do the bombings to flush them out. All along the vibe that, you know, ELF, if it actually does exist, it's much more likely to be a concoction of an anti-environmental group. You know, I think that there's a lot more to be gained by someone creating a red herring like this if they are in the deniers column, or someone who driving me friggin' crazy. But, you know, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. I keep losing words, but it just makes no sense. I keep trying to make sense of it, and it doesn't make any sense. Just like this doesn't make any sense. I don't know if you saw this. Betsy sent this to me yesterday, and Gene just sent it to me again. George W. Bush, this is great. Talk about opposite world. Here we go. This has got to be in my top 10 in the last year. Bush, America is in the lead on climate change. I guess this was yesterday. It says, this morning, President Bush gave his keynote address at the Washington International Renewable Energy Conference, a ministerial-level conference hosted by the U.S. government. Trying to stamp down what he called stereotypes, Bush insisted the U.S. was leading the effort to combat global warming. You lying sack of shit. And here's Bush's quote. Now look, I understand stereotypes are hard to defeat. People can get an image planted in their head, and sometimes it causes them not to listen to the facts. But America is in the lead when it comes to energy independence. Oh, yeah? Really? You're a jackass. We're in the lead when it comes to new technologies. We're in the lead when it comes to global climate change. Yeah, in the lead, fucking fueling it more than anybody else. 5% of the population, 25 to 30% of the world's carbon emissions. You deluded little son of a bitch. Here at the Think Progress Post. Bush... Words could come straight out of my mouth. Bush's claims defy the imagination. At the UN conference in Bali in December, the U.S. objected to the proposal backed by Britain and the EU to cut carbon dioxide emissions 24 to 40% below 1990 levels by 2020. We have problems with defining the numbers up front, the White House head climate negotiator explained. It's amazing. They just kind of go both sides of their mouth, you know. Oh, we can't have targets. Targets would make us do something. Oh, wait a minute, but we're in the lead. We're in the lead. Can't you see? We're talking. We're in the lead. We're in the lead. Unbelievable. Chat room is just like, I'm wound up like an 8-day clock. But then, you know, you read this stuff, and it's just, you know, this should be coming from The Onion. This should not be reality. 6 months earlier, Bush single-handedly killed a statement of commitment to having emissions by 2050 by the leaders at the G8 summit. While the U.S. remains the only industrialized nation that has refused to sign on to the Kyoto Protocol, other nations are taking the lead. A few examples for you. Britain has set a strong goal to cut CO2 emissions by 60% by 2050, leaving the door open for steeper cuts. Sweden will halve its CO2 emissions by 2050. The European Union created a cap-and-trade system more than 2 years ago in 2005. It's not perfect, it's got its problems, but, hey, they're working on it. They're trying to make it work. They're trying to make a difference. And Rome wasn't bloody built in a day. French President Nicolas Sarkozy has supported caps on airplane emissions. Japan announced last month that it would consider a cap-and-trade system rather than taking real action to address our warming planet, as these nations have, Bush chooses to frequently and grossly inflate his record on combating climate change. I mean, I had this one in the pile for last night, and I'm kind of glad that I didn't get to it till today, because I can have a little bit of fun with these things. But, you know, and they don't list it here, but Australia is going to come up with its reduction targets probably this year. In fact, Kevin Rudd is in Papua New Guinea at the moment, fixing relations after they had gone a little bit sour over the last decade. And one of the things that he was over there was to set up reservation of rainforests in Papua New Guinea to try and maintain some of the carbon sinks that still exist. So, and I think we will see this year the full turnaround from Australia. I mean, we already have seen it, you know. The first thing Kevin Rudd did when he became prime minister was he went to Bali and said, yeah, we're going to sign. And the Australian mob who went, including Peter Garrett and Paddy Wong, were given a standing ovation by the world body. And the United States was booed. Never forget that. The world booed the United States because they still refuse to take responsibility. So the only way that the United States is leading the world on climate change is leading the world on making it change faster. and for the worse. Unbelievable, but then again, it's so believable. We live in this opposite world, screwed up perspective of a society these days. Black is white, white is black. Bush's head is up his ass. Must not be a very tight fit with that small brain of his. Did I just say that out loud? I also found it, I'm not sure if it was on Bob's show or not. We got a couple minutes to go here. One of his callers, I think it was your show, Bob, was talking about going and seeing Barack Obama and how when he talked about alternative energy, there was not one mention of the big lie, clean coal. Which, if that's the case, that would be a nice shift in his position. Because he used to go on and on about clean coal, clean coal, clean coal. And we all kind of know that clean coal, it hasn't been done yet. It's still a myth, and probably always will be a myth. And even if they find a way to do it, I have a feeling it won't be worth it financially. We have better things. but, you know, this kind of stuff is madness. So, again, just one more reason why we need to get a Democrat in the White House to make some changes. And, you know, we get off of oil, we can stop fighting resource wars. Hello! Talk about saving some serious money. Get off the oil and look at all the other people's business we won't have to go meddling in. And I think I'll just leave it there. So we're going to wrap it up for tonight and for me for the week. Folks, been a really good week. Don't forget next week, Mr. Travis Meeks on Thursday night. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing tonight, as he always does. Wonderful job. Thanks to our bloggers and our mods. Thank you, Gene and Betsy. The links this week have just been absolutely outstanding. I think I did about 1 out of 20, maybe, if I was lucky. And thanks to our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch. We're right behind you on that fight. And as we say here on Fucked Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I took my hair up under my hat and I went in to ask him why. What gives you the right to put up a fence to keep me out or to keep Mother Nature in? If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner.
Sign, sign, everywhere a sign, blocking out the scenery, breaking my mind.
Do this, don't do that, can't you read the sign?
membership card to get inside.
Worked for Barney Frank for almost 3 years, so
yes,
you know, I have my own prejudice. My bias is literally on the table, but I agree with him on this one. Here's what Barney Frank did. He didn't leave.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I apologize for that late start there. You see, I was stood up today. I had planned to have Max Blumenthal on the air. Max Blumenthal is the son of Sidney Blumenthal, the famous Clinton advisor. And he was going to do a show on Pastor John Hagee, someone who Bob Kincaid has told you.